is brought to you by Head Start Basketball.
I kept trying to find ways to get our guys to believe that we could do it. And I just never, ever strayed from that with our guys.
John Vanderwall has been the head men's basketball coach at Marietta College in Ohio since 2007. Vanderwall became the all-time winningest coach in program history during the 2018-2019 season. Vanderwall has led the Pioneers to 6 Ohio Athletic Conference regular season championships, 3 OAC tournament championships, and 8 appearances in the NCAA tournament, including runs to the Elite Eight in 2014-15 and 2018-19. His overall record as a head coach is 267 and 112. John had a 4-year playing career at Albion College in Michigan, then served as a graduate assistant coach at Defiance College before becoming the lead assistant at Ohio Wesleyan University in 2003. He took over a program at Marietta that went 32-96 in the 5 years prior to his arrival and turned the Pioneers into one of the best D3 programs in the country. Hey, Hoopheads, I wanted to take a minute to shout out our partners and friends at Dr. Dish Basketball. Their Dr. Dish shooting machines are undoubtedly the most advanced and user-friendly machines on the market. Sign up now for their virtual camp 2.0 featuring 10 days of workouts with pro trainers from the Dr. Dish family. Learn more at drdishbasketball.com and follow their incredible content at Dr. Dish B-Ball on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. Mention the Hoopheads podcast and save an extra $300 on the Dr. Dish Rebel, All-Star, and CT models. Visit drdishbasketball.com for details. That's a great deal, Hoopheads. Get your Dr. Dish shooting machine today.
Hi, this is Don Showalter from USA Basketball, and you are listening to the Hoopheads podcast.
Prepare like the pros with the all-new Fast Draw and Fast Scout. Fast Draw has been the number one play diagramming software for coaches for years. You'll quickly see why Fast Model Sports has the most compelling and intuitive basketball software out there. For a limited time, Fast Model is offering Hoopheads listeners 15% off Fast Draw and Fast Scout. Just use the code HHP15 at checkout to grab your discount, and you'll be on your way to more efficient game prep and improved communication with your team. Fast Model also has new coaching content every week on its blog, plus play and drill diagrams on its playbank. Check out the links in the show notes for more. Fast Model Sports is the best in basketball. If you're looking to improve your coaching, please consider joining the Hoopheads Mentorship Program. We believe that having a mentor is the best way to maximize your potential and become a transformational coach. By matching you up with one of our experienced mentors, you'll develop a one-on-one relationship that will help your coaching, your team, your program, and your mindset. The Hoopheads Mentorship Program delivers mentoring services to basketball coaches at all levels through our team of experienced head coaches. Find out more at hoopheadspod.com or shoot me an email directly, mike@hoopheadspod.com. Follow us on social media at hoopheadspod on Twitter and Instagram, and be sure to check out the Hoopheads Podcast Network for more great basketball content. Are you tired of overpaying for your video and analytics platform? Well, it's time to check out QuickCut.com, a platform built by coaches for coaches. QuickCut is undeniably more affordable, it's all cloud-based, and comes packed with features to help high schools and youth programs store, share, and analyze game film. Make the switch, get double the storage, and save your program up to 50% on the fastest-growing video editing system in the country. For more information or to request a free trial, visit QuickCut.com/basketball. That's QWIKCUT.com. Make sure you grab your notebook before you listen to this episode with John Vanderwall, head men's basketball coach at Marietta College in the state of Ohio. Hello and welcome to the Hoopheads podcast. It's Mike Klinzing here with my co-host Jason Sunkel tonight. And we are pleased to welcome to the podcast tonight the head coach at Marietta College, John Vanderwall. John, welcome to the Hoopheads pod.
Hey, Mike. Thanks for having me. I'm excited to be here to chat with you guys tonight.
Absolutely. We're excited to dig into your basketball journey, learn a little bit more about what you've done both at Marietta earlier in your career and throughout your basketball life. Let's start by going back in time to when you were a kid
tell us a little bit about how you got into the game of basketball when you were younger.
Well, yeah, you know, just like probably most young kids growing up, my dad was really involved in athletics. And I remember growing up at living at the softball field and in the gym, watching him play men's leagues and all that kind of stuff. And just kind of, we were kind of a sports family growing up. And, you know, I kind of remember just always playing with my buddies. I went to a small private elementary school and we would play hoops at recess every day. And, I just thought I was kind of like everybody else. I just playing sports and having fun with it. And I didn't really go to my first, you know, organized basketball, like league or clinic, if you will, until I was about in the fourth grade. And I remember going to this little tryout thing and for a youth league and getting there and like just killing it and doing really well, right? Like, and I was like, and then afterwards, everybody's like, "Hey, man, we want you on our team. We want you on our team." This, that. And I was like, I remember going home going, "Man, I'm pretty good at basketball." You know, it's like light went off my head. Like when I was in fourth grade, like, "Hey, I'm kind of good at this thing." And that's kind of where it started. Where then I started wanting to go into the driveway every day and really work on my game and start getting better at it because I felt like, man, this might be something I'm pretty good at. So that's kind of where things took off for me and you know, the rest is kind of history and just kind of grew up playing the game. And I played all the sports growing up, you know, football, basketball, baseball, kind of was a three sport athlete for the most part growing up. And, but basketball was always my true love.
When you think about your background as a multi-sport athlete, and then you kind of think about the way that our system is set up today where kids tend to specialize probably earlier than they did back when you were growing up. Just yeah. What do you do? How do you see that as whether as a college coach, what's your thoughts on multi-sport athletes, your experience with them, and just generally speaking, just what the basketball system looks like today compared to the one that you grew up in?
Yeah, that's a great question. You know, I could go a bunch of different directions, I guess, answering that. I mean, my best players on my team here at Marietta College were all quarterbacks in high school for the most part. We've got some of our best guys played football. Maybe it's just kind of what I'm drawn to, big, strong, athletic guys that are really competitive. And those guys, you know, maybe tend to play football. But, you know, so we've got a lot of guys on our team that we're at least a two-sport athlete, if not three. But, you know, as a basketball coach, you kind of want basketball junkie guys too, right?
Like right,
guys that just live in the gym. And, you know, when I hear recruits playing football or baseball or doing other stuff, I'm like, okay, well, I have a positive response to that because I was one of those kind of guys, and I like those kind of guys, but I also want guys that want to be in the gym all day long as well. So, and then, you know, and then on the other side of things, I've got two young kids. I've got an 11-year-old daughter and an 8-year-old boy. And, man, I don't know what we were doing this fall. We signed my boy up. He was playing flag football and he was in the basketball league and he played football baseball all at the same time, right? So my wife was ready to kill me. And people ask me, I'm like, yeah, sure, he can do that. My wife will get him there, right? But so, you know, I don't know. I think it's good for these, especially for the younger kids to just have fun and to play a bunch of sports and then, you know, kind of see what they fall in love with. And I think people are often kind of surprised with me and my kids. I think they kind of expect me just to have my kids in the gym all day, every day. And that's not the case. I mean, we've spent more time at the football field or the baseball field or a softball diamond, you know, than we probably do in the gym. Cause I'm just trying to let them be kids right now and have as much fun with it as they can. And then if they fall in love with, you know, one of those sports, we'll go at it hard if that's what they want to do. But, I'm all for, especially at the younger levels, let the kids just be kids. You know, I think too many of us we're trying to raise college athletes instead of trying to raise, you know, quality young people. So, you know, that's kind of my stance on it. But if you look at my team, you think I was recruiting more football players than I am basketball guys.
It's interesting how you approach it with your own kids when you talk about, and I think it's something that anybody who's out in the youth basketball space today, you see so many people who you mentioned that parents think they're trying to raise college athletes and they forget that, hey, your kid's 9 years old and they haven't even been through puberty and you don't know what they're going to be yet. And you should just want to keep them playing as many different things for as long as they can. And then eventually you and I both know that if you're going to get good enough to where you can play at the college level, you're going to do that because you fall in love with a particular sport and you're going to put the time in and put the work in and put the effort in. And it doesn't really have a whole lot to do with whether mom or dad signed you up for this league or had you working with this trainer when you were 9 years old. It really comes down to, you got to give those kids exposure to different things and then eventually they fall in love with it. But it's a difficult thing. I'm sure you see it as a parent sitting in the stands and watching your kids, that there's such a pressure on parents because they see what other people are doing.
Yeah,
and they think, oh, my kid has to be doing those same things in order to achieve success. And I think it's a challenge. Probably the biggest challenge I think we face in youth sports is just that it becomes more about what the parent wants or what the youth sports organization wants and less about what the kid wants. Because I'm not sure there are too many 8 or 9 year olds that want to practice any sport 3 or 4 nights a week and drive 45 minutes to go to practice. I'm sure they'd much rather be just hanging out with mom and dad or their brother or sister or their friends or shooting baskets on the driveway or tossing the ball around out in the front yard than driving all these organized practices that we sometimes make them go to.
For sure. You know, I firmly believe, you know, you've got to love what you're doing and have fun doing it before you're willing to work at it. Right. And in today's world, it feels like parents are just ready to make their kids start working at things right away. And, you know, and while a kid at 8, 9, 10 years old maybe thinks they want to train all day, every day and become the next LeBron James, you know, that at some point, I just fear that kid's going to get burnt out. Right.
Yep, and, that's true.
And so, you know, I've really kind of, you know, it's tough, you know, as a college basketball coach, you'd love to see your kids really excel on the basketball floor. But I'm doing my best just to kind of let them, you know, blaze their own trail and find their own path. And I would be totally fine if, actually almost relieved probably, if it wasn't basketball, if it was something else, right, where I could just be a dad and not a coach, you know, because ultimately that's what I want to do. And I think they'll have more fun doing it that way as well. So, but yeah, you're exactly right. We feel like you see all these other parents and kids doing all this stuff, and you feel like, well, man, if we're not doing that, we're losing track. But you know, I just want my kids to have fun with whatever they're doing.
Have you coached them at all?
Very little. I try not to. I guess, you know, I'll give you a brief story. Our season got done early this past year because of COVID, and my daughter played on a really good AAU team and played up an age group. And some of the dads wanted to go to one more, you know, everybody wants to go to one more tournament, right? And,
right, for sure.
Yeah, one more, right? And we signed up for 5 tournaments, the next thing you know, we're in 9. But, you know, and so somehow I got conned into taking the group to a tournament. And I told the one dad, all right, you're the GM. I'll be the coach. But I'm only coaching. I'm not doing anything else. We'll have 3 practices and I'll take him to the tournament. And we weren't, I don't know if you probably have never seen me coach. I'm a pretty intense guy. So, but I haven't been teed up in like 8, 9 years, you know. I guess maybe I've been around long enough.
And all right. See, you got it under control, John. You're good. Yeah, you got it under control.
I'm doing pretty good. Right. I made it. A whopping, I don't know, 10 minutes into my daughter's first sixth grade AAU game. And I was joking around with an official and I guess he didn't realize I was joking around and I got teed up and I'm never going to live it down. Right. So I told my wife, this is not for me. I can't do this, but we did well. We won the tournament. It was fun, but I'm gonna retire after that.
It's hard to coach your own kids. It really is. I've done it for a while with mine as they were younger, and my son, who's a sophomore in high school, is sort of, I think he's gonna probably age out of me coaching him, which is good. It's been fun for me to just sit in the stands and get an opportunity just to watch him play. And it's a totally different perspective, as you know, when you're coaching versus when you're just sitting in the stands as a parent. As a coach, you're so invested in the outcome, and you obviously you're thinking about it all the time. And it could be a third grade basketball game and you lose and you're going home and thinking about it. What could we have done differently? Oh my God, I should have done this and should have done that. And whereas when I sit in the stands as a parent, a minute after that game's over, I mean, I hope the kids won, but it doesn't matter to me anymore. You just give your kid a hug and you're like, hey, I loved watching you play. Whereas when you're a coach, you can't turn it off that way.
Right. Yeah, for sure. For sure.
All right. So thinking back to when you were playing, give me a highlight from your high school career. What's something that sticks out when you think about your experience as a high school player?
Oh man. You know, I just having fun playing with the kids that you grew up with, I think is, you know, we had fairly solid teams, you know, as a high school player, I was on the varsity as a sophomore. And then, you know, I had a really, really good season as a junior. Unfortunately for me, my junior year, it was like me and about seven seniors. And so those guys all graduated. And then, the next year when I was a senior, it was me and a lot of younger guys. And, so my senior year was kind of tough. We didn't have a great year. You know, just because I was kind of carrying the load and I averaged the same amount of points. I probably doubled the amount of shots because I just, you know, was having to force some things and do all that kind of stuff. But I, you know, we weren't, you know, I wasn't on a state championship high school team and, or anything like that, but just playing with the guys that you grew up with. Right. And, that you went to school with from a really young age and get a chance to compete against all the other schools up in Northern Michigan, where I grew up and all that kind of stuff. I mean, those are the things that you really remember and cherish.
How'd you work on your game when you were in high school? What'd you do when you were working out on your own? How'd you find pickup games? Where'd you go to improve? What was your plan in the summertime while you were a high school player?
Yeah, you know, it was so different back then. And man, now when I say back then, it makes me sound old, and I don't like to do that. But you know, I grew up in a smaller town in Northern Michigan, and you know, there wasn't a ton going on. I mean, I was fortunate where I could call my high school coach any day or any time. And he lived kind of between my house and the high school. And I would just swing through and pick up the keys. And Coach Kellogg would just meet me at the door and toss me the keys. And I'd go in the gym. And I spent just endless hours in the gym all by myself. To be honest with you. And it's crazy. You know, back then we didn't have a gun or a shooting machine or any of that stuff. It was just, you know, me going into the gym and just getting up a ton of shots and having an imagination. Like I was hitting the game winner all the time, right? Just all that kind of stuff. And then I had some buddies, you know, we would get together and play a lot of one-on-one and just go in and try to work on some things. But I'm always amazed, by today's athletes. Like, our guys always, hey coach, can you write me up a workout? It's like, you know, well, yeah, sure, I can give you a workout, yeah, but you know,
just go play one on one in your imagination, right, against Dominique Wilkins. Right.
Exactly, right. And so, yeah, I just did so much of that stuff, right. It's like nowadays, you know, it's YouTube. You want to find some drills you want to work on, you can. You can get online. You can find anything you want. I talk to kids at our summer camps about this. It's like kids nowadays have so many more resources than we had back then. It was just, you know, you just had to, hey, what do you want to be good at? You know, do you want to work on your crossover? Or do you want to be able to shoot off the bounce or what? You know, I mean, whatever. I mean, you kind of had to just make it up yourself and figure out what kind of player you wanted to be. And I feel like everybody nowadays has so many resources. Maybe to an extent, too many resources where they're dependent on those things where they need coach to write up a workout or whatever. And, but yeah, that's, it was nothing, you know, earth shattering. It was just getting in the gym, you know, and I just liked being in the gym and working on my game.
Yeah. Just having a ball in your hands, it was totally different. And you didn't have, as you said, all the resources to be able to put together a solid plan. I know I think about myself and basically I did the same workout for six, 7 years between high school and college where I was just doing the same thing. I mean, I had very little creativity in terms of varying up things. I knew what I was working on, but I did very little variation from one day to the next. It was kind of like I had my pet drills that I probably got really good at those drills. I'm not sure after a while how much it translated to making me a better player out on the floor. But right. It would have been fun to grow up in this era where you had a little bit of some of those resources at your fingertips. And yet I always say that the opportunity to go play pickup basketball in the time when I grew up, you know, late 80s, early 90s, it just, that stuff didn't exist. It just doesn't exist in the same way today. Kids today just don't, you can't find pickup basketball the way you could find it back when I was growing up. And it just, sure. It makes for a totally different system and a way of kids getting better and improving. And obviously I think the coaching that kids get exposed to earlier is so much better today. I mean, I think the first time I got to, when I got to college was the first time I had ever heard of a closeout. So right. I mean, I'm sure my coach taught it, but it certainly was. That's not what it was called when I was in high school. And so there's just so many things now that kids get exposed to from that standpoint that I think is so much beneficial. And thinking about college basketball, when did college basketball get on your radar that you thought, hey, I want to give this a shot. I'd love to be able to have the opportunity to play beyond high school.
Well, you know, I thought about that. You know, I think probably when I was in middle school, I knew once I kind of fell in love with the game and I knew I was pretty good. I knew then that was something that I really, really wanted to do past high school, you know? And, so that from a very early age, you know, I had my mindset that I was going to be a college basketball player. And like most kids, you know, growing up, as I got into high school, I thought I was D1. You know, I mean, I was shocked that every D1 wasn't knocking down my door, and I didn't understand why. But you know, I ended up at a great place and had a really good career. But I knew real early that I was definitely going to want to play beyond high school.
What was the decision making process that led you to go to Albion?
My recruiting process was. Again, I think my recruiting process probably makes me a better recruiter at the Division III college level because I can still remember what was going on in my head back when I was 18. You know, I was young, naive, arrogant 17, 18 year old who probably thought he was a lot better than he was. You know, and I was getting a lot of Division II looks early on and just thought like, man, I was kind of like blowing them off. Right. Like I thought Central Michigan or Western Michigan should be all over me. And they weren't. And so I kind of probably screwed up my recruiting a little bit just with my arrogancy and thinking I was probably better than I was. And, you know, really never, you know, I gave a couple, you know, Albion and Calvin and Hope, you know, had, you know, kind of listened to them for a while, you know, just kind of, but never really thought I would end up at one of those places. And when it was all said and done, just, you know, Coach Turner at Albion and just did a great job of hanging with me. And, you know, and I was one of those guys that made a decision real late. I think it was like the end of May before I made the decision. I was one of those guys that if I was recruiting me now, I would probably hate. you know, I'd tell my assistants, forget that kid. Man.
He's just stringing us along, right?
Yeah, right. But it's the exact opposite. I tell my assistants now, like, hey, man, like, don't let this kid discourage you. If it's a kid that we think is really, really good, and maybe he's not showing us a ton of love, we do hang with that kid probably longer, maybe than most staffs would, just because I know that kid's probably a lot like I was. Right. And at the end of the day, he could be a really good, really good player at our level. And we recruit, you know, probably more against Division II schools than we do against Division III schools because of the caliber athlete we're trying to get. So, you know, we're trying to hang with some guys and convince some guys to turn down some scholarship money and all that stuff to maybe get a little different experience playing for us. And so we do have to hang with guys maybe a little longer than some other places. But I think my experience through the recruiting process is now kind of maybe aiding us in the recruiting process as a coach.
Yeah, it's interesting when you think about what your mentality is and if you can relate that to the situation that you have in your own coaching profession where you're looking at that and going, yeah, I remember what my mindset was. And you obviously were your experience was, I'm sure, super typical. Everybody who has aspirations of playing college basketball, you think, hey, I'm going to be this guy that's going to get recruited by this school or this level. And the reality, especially when you go back in time nowadays, I think it's a little bit harder to be delusional today because of social media and just because of the exposure and the information that's available. Now you can ignore the information, which I know a lot of people do, but if you want to get the real picture of kind of where you're at, I think it's easier. Whereas you go back to when you're growing up, when I was growing up, like I didn't know anything about the recruiting process. I had no idea what I was doing. My high school coach didn't have any experience with anybody being recruited at the level I was being recruited. My parents had no idea. I had no idea. So I ended up making a lot of stupid decisions about where I was going to go and how I was going to handle it and who I was talking to and what I thought was going to happen. And it's fantastic that you're able to take that experience now and utilize it, I'm sure, to be able to better relate to your athletes. Because I'm sure there was still a part of you, even when you went to Albion, there was still a part of you thinking, oh man, like I should be going to Western Michigan, or I should be getting an opportunity to go to Central Michigan. So now you got to kind of flip that mindset and be like, all right, here I am. I got to be the best player that I can be at the level where I am. And I'm sure that you probably have to have some of those conversations as a head coach as well.
Sure. For sure. I mean, I not only in the recruiting process, but then also once they get to campus, right? I mean, I remember thinking, okay, well, shoot, I guess I'm going to Albion, right? And if I'm going to play Division III, I'm going to walk in there and tear these guys a new one. I'm going to be an All-American right away. You know, this is and then you get on campus and you're there for 2 weeks and you quickly realize you're going to have to reevaluate things pretty quickly, right? I
mean, absolutely.
That's not how things are going to go. And so, you know, same thing for my guys, right? Like we'll get some guys to maybe turn down, you know, some full ride offer someplace to pay a little bit and come play at Marietta. And they're thinking, well, man, if I'm turning down these higher level places, I'm going to walk in here and be the man. And, you know, 95% of the time that's not the case. And so again, that part of it too, I think helps me mentor our guys once they get on campus, about how to handle that adjustment period. And how, what mindset and attitude and approach they need to take and all that kind of stuff. So I just kind of try to draw from all my experiences from when I was younger to, you know, when I got to college, the mistakes I made. I think a lot of my coaching is just trying to get my guys not to make the mistakes I made, right? And to just take a better perspective on things than maybe what I did.
What are some of those mistakes that you feel like you made, not only just in the recruiting process, but is there anything that how you approached your playing career as a college player, things that you look back on, you're like, I wish I would have handled that differently, that now you can relate to your current players?
Well, you know, I think a lot of it is just mental stuff, you know, with attitude and approach and mentality and just how to handle coaching. You know, I was such a fiery guy as a player. I was so competitive and I'm still that way, I guess, as a coach. I took everything personally and now I realize, you know, just like most guys that go from being a player to a coach, they see the other side now, right? And so you look at things so differently as a coach than you did as a player. And just trying to help speed up that learning curve with our guys. You know, I would say also, you know, I was out of the guys that I played basketball with. I mean, I was probably the hardest worker on the team. I was in the gym the most. You know, I mean, I put a lot into it, but there's so much more I could have done. And you know, a lot of times guys think they're working really hard and that they're putting a lot into it, but there's always guys doing a lot more and there's always more to be done. So we're just trying to get our guys to, you know, take the right mentality towards everything that they do.
When did coaching get on your radar? Were you one of those kids? What I found over the course of doing however many interviews we've done here on the pod is that most people fall into one of two camps. Either there's somebody that they played, but even when they were playing and they were in third grade, they were drawing up plays on a napkin and they were kind of thinking of themselves as a coach. And then you have the other camp where they were just completely focused on being a player. And then all of a sudden their playing career ended, whether that was it ended in high school or it ended after college, or they played some professional basketball. And all of a sudden they're looking around and going, wait, the game is done now. What am I going to do?
Yeah.
Now I come to coaching. Do either one of those kind of describe how you came to coaching?
Yeah, the second one's definitely me. I was just so focused on being a player. And, you know, I went to LB College to play basketball, as bad as that sounds, right? even though it's Division III, you know, so
I got a good story on that for you, John. Finish your thought, and then I'm going to tell you a good story as a parent. Go ahead.
Okay. You know, and so I did go to class. I did a nice job with my academics at LBN. I had no idea what I really wanted to be when I grew up. And, you know, the only thing I really knew was going to school and playing basketball. So when I got to college, I was like, well, I guess I'll go into education so I can be a high school coach when that day comes. And so that was kind of my train of thought. So I was in the education department at LBN College. I was a history major and a PE minor. Thought I'd just probably end up, you know, teaching history and coaching the high school basketball team somewhere. And I did my student teaching second semester of my senior year and hated every second of it. part of it was, you know, it was the second semester in college. You know, all your buddies got like bowling class. They like got like, you know, they're pretty much just riding the wave into graduation. And here I am. I'm getting up at 5:30 every morning to drive at Marshall High School to student teach all day long. And these 11th grade kids in my social study class wanted nothing to do with what I was trying to tell them. And I was just like, what am I doing, man? This is not what I want to do with my life. And so I started panicking a little bit and went and talked to, you know, my college coaches and just said, I think I just wasted 4 years of a lot of time, energy and money. And can you guys help me out? And so I was fortunate enough to get a graduate assistant position at Defiance College, you know, I would much rather just do it. And I didn't even really know. We used to give Coach May, who's now the head coach at LB, and he was the assistant coach when I was there. We used to give him so much credit. What do you do? Sit around and just draw plays all day? You know,
right, exactly.
We had no idea as a player. You know, no idea. Like, you guys got the cake. You got the easiest job in the world. You guys coach basketball, right? And, so I'm like, that sounds cool. Can I do something like that? And so, yeah, those Coach Turner, Coach May helped me out, got me started. And that's kind of, you know, the direction I went. But once I went that direction, it was like, okay, this is what I was born to do. You know, it was like, it was kind of a weird path maybe getting there. Didn't really know that that's the route I was going to go, because like you said, I was so focused on just being a really good player. But once those playing days were done, it was like, all right, well, I want to be the best coach I could possibly be.
All right. So before I ask you about those first experiences at Defiance and just what that was like for you, I'll tell you my quick story. It just struck a nerve with me when you said that, you know, you went to school to play basketball and that was why you went. And my experience was very similar. Like I picked and went to Kent State because I wanted to play basketball, and it was strictly a basketball decision. It had nothing to do with the school or what I wanted to study or majors and none of that stuff. It had zero to do with that. It had only to do with basketball. And so yeah. Now I have a daughter who's a senior who is not going to go and play, you know, be an athlete in college, but she's a very, very good student and she's not sure what she wants to do. And she's not sure where she wants to go to school. And so my ability to help her to make that decision and try in terms of trying to figure out like what's a good school, what's a good fit. And she'll ask me questions. I'll be like, I don't really know. I just went to play basketball, you know? And so it's just funny when you have somebody here who, again, has an experience that's completely different from your own. as a parent, it's always a challenge trying to figure that out. And me trying to help her, I'm like, look, I got nothing because I just wanted to hoop. And that's really what it came down to. And you know, again, just like you, I eventually figured it out. And, you know, I kind of went the opposite route. I got a business degree and then went back to school to become a teacher. And so here I am. But nonetheless, it's just interesting how we all eventually find our path. But I had no thought whatsoever that I wanted to coach. I was strictly a player until the day my career as a player ended. And then I just looked around. I'm like, hey, I got to somehow stay involved in the game of basketball because it's been such a huge part of my life. So, yeah. All right. So that first experience at Defiance, you mentioned how as a player, you have no idea kind of what's going on behind the scenes with coaching. So when you got that first job, do you remember anything in particular that surprised you? Like, oh my gosh, like, I can't believe that all my coaches over the years were doing these things. Like, what was something that was surprising to you when you got that first job?
Just the amount of work that goes into it, right? Like with all the preparation. And, you know, I do remember like it was yesterday, like Tom Palumbo was my boss. He was the head coach at Defiance. He's now at Guilford, and he was a great coach. And he's had a ton of success down at Guilford now. And, so I got really lucky because he was a great coach. I was the GA, but I was our only assistant. So while I'm a GA, it's not like being a GA at Division I when you've got, you know, all these full-time assistants and you're maybe, you know, doing the laundry or whatever. Right. I mean,
you were doing it all.
I was doing it all. Right. Like he's trying to teach me how to, you know, cut the film up, you know, and obviously it was VHS back then. And you know, I had a dual deck VHS player that I'm like trying to hit record and stop and all this kind of stuff. And then he threw me into the fire. I mean, I remember standing outside the gym the first day. I was moving into the place I was living in, and I said, all right, well, he's like, tomorrow's the first day. I'm like, all right, well, what time do I got? Come in. You're like, I had no idea. And he's like, all right, let's just meet me at 8:30. I'm gonna give you a list of things to do, right? And that's where it started. It was like I came in the first day, had a list of 8 or 9, 10 things for me to do, and I started banging them out. And I think he was actually kind of surprised with how quickly I was getting them done. And every morning I would just kind of go in, and he would just kind of give me new things to do. And that was kind of how he taught me, you know. And then obviously, you know, when the season came, then it was like, whoa, I got to have all these scouting reports done and I've got to do all this. And I think that's something that people don't realize, like about Division III coaches, is when you grow up kind of in this level, you become a really well-rounded coach because you've got to be able to do it all. You can't just specialize in one thing. You can't just be just a good recruiter or just a good X's and O's guy or behind the scenes, you know, getting things ready for the games and the travel and all that stuff. It's you got to do it all. And so as the only assistant coach, we had a couple part-time guys that, you know, had other jobs in town and things like that, but I was the only guy in the office every day. You know, you just get thrown into the fire right away. And I was doing it for a really good coach but at the same time, gave some 22-year-old kid a lot of responsibility, and that was good for me, and it really helped me grow as a coach.
What was an aspect of coaching that you took to right away? What was something that, if you were going to think back to that time and say, man, this is one of the aspects of coaching that really made me think, hey, this is what I want to do for the rest of my life. Was there something that stood out? Like, did you love coaching offense? Did you love player development? Did you love being on the bench during a game? Just what stood out to you that you're like, man, this piece of it, the relationship with players, what stood out to you that really made you think, hey, this is something that I can do for the rest of my life?
I don't know if there's one specific thing. You know, I when I got to Defiance, you know, when I played at LBN, we were a strong, physical, real defensive-minded team. And so Coach Palumbo basically said, listen, you're gonna be in charge of the defense. And so, like, I was kind of like the D coordinator, right? And so it was almost just like that responsibility that he gave me and let me coach, you know? And so like, I just got thrown in the fire right away. And like, I was like, responsible for a lot of things. And he just let me be responsible for those things. And that was invigorating for me, right? Like that got that really got me going. And then too, just getting on the road, I'm a people person. I like to talk to people. I like to meet people. So the recruiting side of it was really intriguing to me, just getting out and then just the competitive edge with the recruiting, right? Like, I mean, Defiance is a really small school in Northwest Ohio and not a ton of resources and all that kind of stuff. And so, yeah, I just remember, Ohio Northern, which is a bigger place with more resources, but Division III as well is just down the road a little ways. And I remember having to try to recruit against Ohio Northern and Coach Flo, Northern's recruiting, we probably can't get the kid. I'm like, no, I'm gonna go get this kid. Right? Like, I'm gonna show you. So like that part of it, just the competitive nature. I think Coach giving me all the responsibility that he gave me, and then I found ways to. I'm ultra competitive, so even with recruiting and just game planning and all that stuff, it was. Coaching was a way for me to fulfill my kind of competitive spirit more, and I couldn't do it as a player anymore, but there was a lot of different areas in coaching where, I could fulfill that.
That makes a lot of sense. I mean, I think that's one of the things that anybody who's played the game and is competitive, when you step away from it, there's a void and you try to figure out ways to fill that void. And obviously coaching is one way that you can continue to compete in the same game that you love, just obviously in a different way. You talked a little bit there about recruiting. How long did it take you? What was the learning curve like to figure out what the type of players were that you should be recruiting? Because I'm imagining, okay, here you are, a 22-year-old kid. You never coached before. Now suddenly you're out on the road trying to scout players, trying to figure out, well, is this kid playing at our level? Are they too good for our level? Are they not good enough for our level? What was that learning curve like? What do you remember about that time?
Yeah, it was. Yeah. I mean, it was a big learning curve. I mean, I remember, on certain occasions coming back to coach's office, be like, hey man, I saw this guy play. He's like, yeah, that guy's going to Peru next year. Oh yeah. I like that guy.
Yeah. Right. He's pretty good. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, told you he was good. Right. But, yeah, so there was a ton of those days, right? And a lot of those days, but then there was some days where I was able to find a diamond in the rough and guys that were probably played with a little bit more of an edge. I mean, I remember we were recruiting a young man that everybody was recruiting, and went and saw him play, and he was a four man, and I really liked the point guard that night. And I came back and I told Coach Palumbo, like, listen, man, they got this point guard that we nobody else is recruiting, but he's really good. He fits what we're doing. And I think he'd be really good here. And he's really good friends with the kid you want. Right? Like, let me recruit this guy. I think he's going to be good and it'll help us get the other guy. And that's exactly what happened. And the point guard that we got ended up being Division III freshman of the year. And, ended up being a real dynamite player. And so that was just like, when those kinds of things as a young coach kind of transpire, you're like, okay, I can do this. Right. And, gives you a little bit of confidence and those are the, kind of success stories that you always remember.
How'd you build your confidence working with players? So again, you're pretty close in age to the guys you're coaching when you get that first position and you're getting a lot of responsibility. So you're out there and you're going through and you're teaching. What do you remember about your mindset there in terms of, hey, are these guys going to buy into me as a coach? Was your confidence high? Were you shaky at that time? What do you remember? Maybe if there's a young coach out there listening, what advice might you have for them if they're sort of in that situation where they're just kind of starting out their career and it's their first real time getting in front of a group of guys and trying to get them to buy in and lead them in the right direction?
Yeah. It's funny that you asked that, because when I was in college at Albion, we played against Defiance and, they have some good teams back then. And they had a kid named Eric Viney who was a really good player. Right. Like, and so he was a year younger than me. So here I am. I was guarding this guy
a year ago, yeah.
And he was like torching me like a year ago, right? Like he's a better player than I am. And now I'm trying to tell him what to do, right?
Right, so right.
That was unique. We had a, and then we had like a, we also my first year had a transfer in that was like 24, 25, you know, and he's playing. He was, you know, one of those guys that maybe spent some time in the military and been a couple places. We had brought him in. So he's like 2 years older than me. And so I'm trying to coach these guys, but I just coach them up, you know, and I think when people see that you're passionate about what you're doing, that you're there for them, it wasn't, you know, I made it a conscious effort that, I was never trying to show Eric Viney up, right? Like I wasn't trying to prove to him my worth. I was there for him, right? I was there to help him become the best player he could be. I was there to help us become the best team we could be. I was extremely passionate about that. I was working my tail off. And I think it didn't take very long for all those guys, whether they were 2 years older than me or 1 year younger than me, to realize, hey, Coach VanderWaal, you know, he working at it, right? Like, and I think when you work really hard at something, you're really passionate about it and you give yourself up for others, people buy in, you know, and you just got to make it about them and not about you. And once they feel that, they begin to trust you.
That's great advice. I think any coach who's listening to that, if you just play back that last 30 seconds of what you just said there, I think it's tremendously valuable advice, especially for coaches who are young and you're just starting to get into it. I think if you're prepared and you're passionate and you make it about the players and not about you, man, that's, you could just, if you could just do those three things as a coach, you're going to end up solving a lot of problems that you might have in your career just by bringing those three things to the table. How did you end up getting to, how did the opportunity at Ohio Wesleyan come to you?
Well, that was kind of a wild deal as well. So I went down and interviewed for the job, full-time position, assistant job at Ohio Wesleyan, and basically got offered the job, but right about the exact same time, Coach Palumbo got offered the job at Guilford. And so everybody was kind of in limbo. And I had told, I think it was like the day before, I told Coach DeWitt at Ohio Wesleyan I was going to take the job. And then Coach Palumbo a day later takes the Guilford job. And so Coach Palumbo wants me to go to Guilford with him. And I say, well, I want to be the head coach of Defiance. So like, I'm like, they got this triangle, right? Like I just kind of accepted the Ohio Wesleyan job. Coach Palumbo wants me to go to Guilford with him. I'm 24 years old. I think I'm ready to be a head coach. And so Coach Mike DeWitt at Ohio Wesleyan, who's one of the nicest human beings and just a great, great person, told me, like, listen, man, if you can get that Defiance job, I mean, go for it. And so he was gracious enough to kind of hang with me for a few weeks and let me go after the Defiance job. And I was a finalist for it. I came down to me and John Miller, who was the assistant at Hanover. And they ultimately ended up giving it to John Miller. And, you know, I was 24. I thought I was ready. It was probably the best thing that ever happened to me that I didn't get it. And so once I didn't get the job, I felt like Coach DeWitt had been so gracious and let me go for it that I couldn't really back out on him then and go to Guilford with Coach Palumbo. So ended up going to Ohio Wesleyan and spent 4 years working for Coach DeWitt, who was, you know, a lot different kind of coach than what Coach Palumbo was. And I think ultimately, you know, those two experiences served me really well because I got to see kind of different ways of going about the job.
What are two or three things that you remember from those two experiences as an assistant coach that you feel like have impacted you as you became a head coach?
Well, I think it's mainly just the two different styles. You know, I think everywhere you are, you kind of take things that you like and maybe you don't like. And then when you become a head coach, you've got to kind of formulate who you want to be as a coach. And I remember getting a job at Marietta at age 28 and like sitting at my desk, like, all right, the heck are we going to, what are we going to run? What are we going to do? We didn't have any good players. So it was like, you kind of just draw back on all of your experiences, one as a player at LBN, and then as your 2 years as a GA at Defiance, and then 4 years at Wesleyan. I kind of basically just took the things I liked from all three places and kind of morphed them into what I thought was going to be my philosophy. Right. And that, I think that's kind of like where you start. And so that's, at least that's where I started. And then once you start having success or having some failures, you kind of figure out some adjustments to make along the way. But I can't point to necessarily one thing at any of those places, but it was definitely, when you think of me and how I coach our team and what our philosophies are, there's pieces from all of those places kind of in what we do.
When do you feel like you had a handle on who you were as a head coach? How many years into your tenure at Marietta were you before you felt like, okay, now I kind of understand who I am as a coach? Because obviously, as a young coach, your first experience, as you said, you're kind of sitting down, you're drawing pieces, parts, you think, okay, I'm going to do this, or I'm going to take that. Or you've had some ideas as an assistant coach of, when I get my opportunity to put my stamp on a program, I'm going to do X, Y, or Z. So you're kind of pulling all those things together. When did you feel like it all really solidified, where you had a really good feel of who you were as a coach and what you wanted your team to reflect out there on the floor?
Yeah, for me, it year four is when it all came together. My first year we won 6 games. We're 6-19, and which was actually better than they had been doing before we got here. And then my second year was, we almost kind of started from scratch with a bunch of freshmen. You know, our first recruiting class, we basically just felt like we had brought in a really good class, and just, we were like, all right, we're going to invest in these guys. And so I feel like I kind of almost grew up with those guys. You know, they kind of were growing up as players. I was growing up as a coach. But when they got to be juniors in my fourth year, you know, we go 27-4 and win our conference for the first time since 1975, and won our conference tournament for the first time in school history, and went to Sweet 16, did all that stuff. And so, but I could also point to that year, and that was the first year, like, I could actually like put my like philosophy like on paper, right? Like really, like, all right, this is what Marietta basketball is, right? Like, it was like, it took like 3 full years of like throwing stuff up against the wall to see if it would stick, right? Like, and trying things out, doing different things. And then finally kind of saying, okay, I'm confident that this is what I want to do on the defensive side of the ball. This is what I want to do offensively. This is how I want to coach our guys. This is going to be our approach every day in practice, right? Like, I mean, there's just so many different aspects to the job that you have to get figured out, right? I mean, recruiting, what kind of kids do you want to recruit, and who can you get? And it's just so much to figure out. And which is also a shame in today's world, you know, these coaches, you get a couple of years and they want you to win a national title in a couple of years, right? And,
absolutely.
And it's like, it just doesn't work that way. It takes a few years to kind of, especially as a first time head coach, it's going to take a few years to really find your comfort zone and figure out who you are as a coach. But for me, it was year four is when I really started to kind of understand who I was as a coach. And obviously for the last 11 years, that's been extended, and we've learned a lot over the last 11 years, and I think grown and matured and got a lot better with a lot of things that we do. But year four was definitely when it started to come together.
Your program has obviously been one that's had sustained success now over the last 10, 11 seasons. But when you first got there, you were walking into a place that hadn't won for a long time and was obviously not the job that it is today. So when you think about that, and this is a question that I love asking the guys who come in kind of a turnaround situation where you inherit a program that's lost and you got to figure out a way to turn it around. And one of the things that I think is always a challenge is you have these ideas in your head of how you're going to turn that around, both from the product that you're going to put out on the floor, but also just in terms of changing the culture from being a losing culture. How do you change that into a winning culture? And yet for you, you talked about bringing in a new recruiting class. You grew up with those kids and, you know, you're starting to turn it around. By the time you get to year four, you're winning and it's all starting to come together. But in the intervening time, you're still losing games. And sometimes it's difficult to figure out, how do I continue to sell my vision of what this program can be when we're not necessarily seeing those results on the scoreboard? So how did you continue to sell your message, continue to get your kids to buy in, continue to have them believe in what you were doing and have you to believe in them while you're building that, but you're still losing on the scoreboard? What do you remember about trying to overcome those obstacles in those first couple of years?
Yeah, I remember it being really tough. I remember questioning myself on many a days. You know, I never let my players see that, right? I remember getting beat by 40 and having a 4-hour bus ride home, and the guys leaving the locker room, right? And you're sitting in the gym and it's just, the lights are off. Yeah. We were building a new library. like my second year here, we were just getting pounded. And so we had to enter the facility from the rec center side, and we couldn't get dropped off at our normal spot. So we used to always, that year we had to walk through the rec center and then go into our gym and everything. And we have a nice facility. I remember like 20 times that year, just walking through there, well, at least I'm at a place with a nice facility, right? Like I'm telling myself, like, try to give myself pep talks, like constantly. Right. And, but I never wavered with our guys. They probably thought I was psychotic. They probably thought I was crazy. I know the administration thought I was crazy. I was told, you know, when people would ask me, hey, where are you going to be in 5 years? I would say we're going to win the league. You know, like, in, we hadn't won the league since 1975, right? And here's this 30-year-old saying we're going to win the league in a couple of years. And I remember being told to, you know, maybe you might want to tone that stuff down. And and I was like, you know, I'm just going to keep trying to, I'm going to try to speak this thing into existence, right? Like, in, I kept trying to find ways to get our guys to believe in it and believe that we could do it. And I just never, ever strayed from that with our guys, you know, in my mind and with my wife and our conversations and with my assistant coaches behind closed doors. Sometimes it was like, what are we doing? Like, we're setting ourselves up for disaster here. But we had a confidence about us. We were working really hard. I was holding everybody to a standard every single day, to the point where, you know, I mean, back then, not very many people were coming to the games, and, you know, we're down 30 and I'm with a minute to go and I'm screaming at our guys about getting a stance and having a better closeout. Right. And my wife's like, I'm not going to keep coming to the games. You're going to keep acting like an idiot like you are. And I said, well, then stop coming. You know what I mean? I'm going to make these guys do things the way I want them done. And I don't care if we're down 30 or up 30, I'm going to make them do things the way I want them to get done. And hopefully someday that's going to pay off. And, you know, and we just kind of, it's crazy. And obviously we struck gold with our first recruiting class. We got a couple kids in that class that were difference makers. And by the time they got to be juniors, and me being half crazy and thinking that we could win and just constantly preaching that stuff, it actually happened, you know. And it to this day, I mean, even we actually just did the school, Marietta College, just did a podcast that came out a few weeks ago about our 2010-11 season and just how magical it was. I mean, we went from playing in front of nobody to about halfway through that season, there was a line 200 yards long outside of our building waiting to get tickets. We were the hottest ticket in town, and it was like Friday Night Lights, you know. I mean, it was just, you know, now for the last 11 years, we've been top five in the country in home attendance. And we just got a really, really unique thing at Marietta College. It's really special. It's you just don't get it have very many places in small college basketball. And so I just feel so fortunate, you know, that I had a group of guys that believed in me and my crazy visions. But my staff and I, we stuck with it, right? We just didn't waver. I mean, we were getting blasted too. And we just didn't waver. We acted like we knew what we were doing. We knew we maybe didn't know what we were doing, but we faked it. We faked it really well. And we got some guys to believe in it. And the dream came true, you know, and it's kind of a in my world, it's a fairy tale really. And that we kind of made happen.
When did you know, like that year, did you know in the preseason before you even played, like, holy cow, like these guys are getting it? And maybe you didn't know you were going to go 27-4, but you knew that, hey, we're going to turn this thing around. Or was it at some point during the season? When did you realize that, hey, maybe this vision that we had is really going to come to fruition this year?
Well, my first year, we lost three straight weekends. We lost by, I think it was 54 at Ohio Northern on a Saturday. The next Saturday, we lost by like 46, I think, at Heidelberg. Then we lost by like 36 at Wilmington. And so I had a recruit from Bowling Green at the Northern game. We got beat by 54. And I said, this is about, I really need you to come to Marietta so this stuff can stop happening to me. I was just saying whatever it took because I didn't think there was any way heck a kid would watch us get beat by 54 and then say, yeah, that's where I want to go play basketball. But he did. And then it was the very next year. So when our first recruiting class was freshmen, we went to Ohio Northern where we had just previously the year before got beat by 54 and we beat them. And it was that was actually the moment when I was like, okay, we just lost by 54 here last year and we just won today. We might be okay in a couple years, you know, because we did it with a bunch of freshmen. And so that year, the next year, kind of leading up to that, you know, we kind of knew like, hey, when these guys get older, we might be pretty good. And so when they got to be juniors in that fourth year, it was, you know, we started off the season 13-0 and I don't know, somewhere along that line, you know, probably about when I do remember this. I remember playing Wilmington. It was like, you know, December 20th. It was like our last game before Christmas break. No students on campus, you know, a game that should be totally dead. And I walked out of the locker room and the gym was completely full. And I just at that moment, I just that was one of those moments that just kind of hits you as a coach. You know, you're like, whoa, wait. We don't even have any students here. This place is full on December 20th and we're 10-0. We might have something brewing here, right? And that's what I do specifically remember that day where it was like, we got something going here.
Yeah. The opportunity to play in front of fans, which obviously you and your career, I'm sure you don't take that for granted at any moment, because we all know that when you get an opportunity to play or to coach in front of a gym that's full, and it's just, it makes it so much more fun. Not that you can't have fun when you're playing in front of a, you know, a crowd or a gym that's half empty, because you certainly can, but man, it makes it a lot more fun when, especially your home environment, when it's rocking and you got fans in the stands and people are supportive. And it just, again, it gives the whole thing a different feel and just, it energizes you. I mean, there's no way that it can't, both as a player and as a coach. And, you know, obviously one of the things that you've been able to do really well over the last 10 years, as you got this run started, is being able to bring in the kind of players that fit what you want to do and fit your program. So when you're out on the recruiting trail or you're sending out your assistants on the recruiting trail, there's obviously a level of talent that a kid needs to be able to have in order to play at Marietta. But what are some of the things that maybe on the intangible side that you're looking for that you know is going to make for a good fit for your program when you're recruiting a kid?
Sure. Yeah. I'm really upfront and honest with all of our recruits about this. I don't think that quiet, shy guys do very well at Marietta. You know, I mean, what we need: tough, hard-nosed, competitive kids that really love basketball. And, you know, there's 450 teams in Division III, and we're trying to be the best program in all of Division III. You know, so we probably take a little different mentality towards this basketball thing than a lot of other Division III places do, right? And there's a lot of Division III places where, hey, if you want to play basketball and it's important to you and you want to be, you know, do it 4, 5, 6 months of the year and all that, there's places you can go. Marietta's not one of them. You know, we're gonna try our best within the rules to operate more like Kent State than we are a normal Division III team, right? I mean, we're gonna be really aggressive here. I tell guys all the time, you got to love basketball to play Division III basketball because you're not getting a full ride scholarship to do it. But to play at Marietta, it's probably got to be part of your DNA. I mean, it's got to be more than that. It's got to be super important to you, and you're going to have to be really, really competitive. We're not. I want nothing to do with mediocre or being pretty good. We're trying to build the best small college basketball program in the country. And so if you come here, we're going to bust your tail. You're going to have to work at it really hard. We have really good players. It's going to be ultra competitive. So, you know, I think learning how to win a spot is a skill set in itself. I constantly talking to guys about, hey, you can't be one of the guys. If you want to be one of the guys, you're going to be one of the guys. You know, you got to figure out a way to stand out. And that doesn't mean you maybe shoot it every time you get it, but it's being tough and hard nosed and doing things the way we teach them. And so, we're looking for those kind of guys that are ultra competitive, that don't need anything handed to them. Obviously we have really good players. We don't promise anybody anything. If a kid's looking for, you know, guaranteed playing time right away or what, we're not the place. Like, you got to come in here and earn it, man. And in order for you to do that here, you better be really good. You'd be really tough. And you better be really competitive. You better not be shy and quiet, right? So, like, those are the guys we're looking for. We're looking for guys, you know, that's kind of who I am. You know, I think your team is always going to kind of take on the personality probably of the head coach to a certain extent. And, you know, I'm a fiery guy. I'm an intense guy. I like to have fun, but, like, we're pretty businesslike. You know? So, like, we just need guys that are okay operating that way. And those are the kind of guys we're looking for.
How do you balance when you're out recruiting, looking at a player in the high school setting versus the AAU setting? Are you looking for different things depending on which setting you're seeing them in? Just how do you evaluate a kid? How much do you weigh their performance as a high school player versus an AAU player? How do you divide that out?
Yeah, that's a great question. With our location in Southeast Ohio, we have to, our guys are from a little bit further away. So, you know, all the Walsh, John Carroll, they can kind of recruit Cleveland and do fine, and Capital Otterbein, right? Columbus, they can probably recruit that area. We've got to extend out a little bit further. So we probably have to utilize the AAU circuit a little bit more than maybe some other Division III schools do. But we really try to use AAU as an evaluation period to see what kind of skills the guys have. You know, obviously it's a little more free flowing, not as structured at the AAU level. That's where we try to find the guys that we think we really like. But to be honest with you, that's where it starts with us. But then from there, it's like, I would much rather see them play in a high school game to evaluate how I think their skills translate to us. And so it's like, okay, AAU is kind of the starting point with who can really play, who's got a good skill set. But then seeing them play in a little more structured sense with their high school team gives us a little bit better evaluation. So, you know, we'll find guys throughout the AAU process, start the recruiting process with them. But then I think once we get out and see them play in high school games, that's when we really get down to the nitty gritty and can say, okay, this guy is kind of what we're truly looking for.
Makes sense. All right. So once you get a guy on campus, obviously, as you just said, you're not promising anybody any playing time, and you clearly have players that are coming back that have been a part of your program in previous years. which sets up a competitive situation, right? You bring in a good player as a freshman, that guy's coming in and wants to earn minutes, and you got your returning players who are fighting for time. So how do you make sure that you set up both a competitive environment, but then also an environment where once guys' roles are established, that your team pulls for one another and that you're all together going in the same direction, despite the fact that you want guys playing hard and competing one against one another day in and day out for playing time?
Yeah, that's what it's all about, right? I mean, I always kind of say my the most important part of my job is recruiting. Then I think it's player development. And then I think it's just, then it's running the program, right? Like creating the culture, right? It's like, that's all before X's and O's and all that kind of stuff. It's just managing the group. And yeah, you're right. I mean, once that's where we're at right now, right? We're five games into the season and roles have kind of been established and guys kind of know where they are. Obviously there's still some spots up for grabs and you know, you make some changes within the lineup here and there, but for the most part, guys kind of know where they're at. And I think it's just constant communication with your guys and the guys outside of the rotation, understanding how valuable they are. You know, we play 10 guys every game at least. I mean, yesterday's game, I played at least 12. Oh, well, I played everybody because it was a blowout. But we go 12, 13 guys a lot of times, but at least 10. So the guys, you know, that aren't in that, you know, top 10 rotation for us or scout team guys in practice and all that, we just constantly preach, well, maybe the people at Stamps don't understand how important you are. These 2 days of practice, man, you guys are going to have a huge, you know, you're going to determine whether we win on Wednesday or Saturday more so than anything else. And so we just try to find ways to motivate our guys and understand and help them understand that they are bringing a ton of value to it while they're also getting better and developing. I think it helps for us just because we've had so much success and we play in such a great environment and we're winning championships and things like that, that guys are a little bit more willing to stick with it, right? Like if you're a young guy, not in a rotation, maybe at a place that's struggling or not getting a great experience, maybe you're moving on or doing something different, but here our guys tend to be a little bit more bought in and stick with it a little bit longer. But I do think we do a nice job of just kind of constantly communicate with those guys and being upfront and honest about where they're at and what kind of impact they're having and just kind of establishing the culture that you want to have.
What do those conversations look like and when do they take place? So are you talking to them on the practice floor? Are you talking to them in individual meetings in the coach's office? What does that communication look like? Obviously, it's got to be frequent because you're busy, you're playing lots of games, and obviously guys' roles can change over the course of the season. So what do those conversations look like for you and your kids?
Yeah, I mean, you know, obviously you can't have long, drawn-out conversations in practice, right? I mean, it's those are quick little snippets, you know, side conversations you're having maybe in practice or a pat on the rear end and all that kind of stuff. But we're having meetings with our guys constantly. And I'm fortunate, you know, even at this level, I've got two full-time assistants and we're calling guys into the office daily, you know, and checking in on them and or pulling them to the side after practice or 10, you know, a few minutes before practice, all those kind of things. I just, you know, on my car ride up to my in-laws here for Thanksgiving, right, I called a couple of our guys and had a 10-15 minute conversation, right, about decisions that were made in yesterday's game and how they should handle it and all that kind of stuff. So I believe in over communicating. I think our guys just kind of always know what I'm thinking and why I'm thinking it. We just kind of believe in brutal honesty. And I think the more honest and upfront and the more you can communicate with your guys, the better off you're going to be. When the guys start, you know, trying to guess what you're thinking,
That's trouble, John.
And then they're having conversations in the locker room or back in the dorm, and those conversations can get sideways real quick, right? And so we talk to our guys a lot about that too. Like, okay, this is what our coaching staff is thinking. This is where we're at. This is what we need to do. What are you guys talking about? And the conversations in the locker room and the conversations in the dorm need to be the right conversations. And so We talk to our upperclassmen a lot about that kind of stuff. Well, we check in with those, even our star players, maybe that I don't need to talk to, you know, or we're having a ton of success. I'm checking in with them to see how the younger guys or, you know, or some other guys on the team are doing. Hey, what are you hearing? Like what's being said? And then, you know, it's once you get those guys talking, you learn a lot. And then you find out the fires that you need to put out or the guys that you need to give a little word of encouragement to. But it's all about communication, and it's so easy to like, just want to focus on the scouting report, and the game plan and all that and practice. And just as a coach, I think so many times we focus so much on that, but managing the guys is so much more important and making sure their heads are on right. Because, you know, I mean, I was that guy too, right? College, right? My mind can get sideways real quick.
Absolutely.
And, so we just try to over-communicate. I would say that would be the thing that we probably do the most.
And that's critical, obviously, too, for you at the Division III level, where you got to have a good relationship with your upperclassmen, because come the offseason, those guys are almost running your offseason programming, right? Because you can't have that kind of contact. So what does that look like as far as making sure that your team's prepared coming into your first day of practice, because the non-contact rules in Division III, how do you handle that as a coach and make sure that you have your team set up for success? As you said, you want guys who are living and breathing basketball, who love it, who are competitive. And now here you are as a competitive guy, and you're not able to get in the gym with them in the fall to be able to get, you know, and over the summer. So you got to rely on your guys, which I'm sure makes that relationship even more important.
Yeah, it's that, and that's why you have to recruit self-motivated guys that really want to work at it, right? And then they come into a place like Marietta, and they kind of see what the older guys are doing, the culture that's been established. And then you're right. I mean, you've really got to lean on your upperclassmen, your guys that have been around, that kind of really understand what you as a coach and how you want things done, and they're, you know, kind of extenders of you. It can kind of help build and promote that culture that you've built. So yeah, that's exactly what goes on. And we've been really fortunate that our guys have just been totally bought in, and they've been self-motivated. They've worked really hard at it. And then once October 15th rolls around, that's when, you know, we try to do a little bit more. You know, it's we try to make up for some lost time. And, you know, right now we're, you know, doing shooting and lifting groups outside of practice, just trying to do a little bit more. But you try to establish everything you can in season, and then hopefully your leaders and your upperclassmen really carry that into the off season.
Yeah, I mean, it's so important to be able to have your team ready to go. And as you said, when you're stepping away, to be able to rely on those upperclassmen, that they're going to be able to get your underclassmen, get your team in the right mindset, have them prepared. So when October 15th does roll around, boom, you can hit the ground running as much as humanly possible without the amount of contact that I'm sure you'd like to be able to get in the gym with them and help them a little bit. But obviously that's not, you're not able to do that at this point.
Yeah.
We talked a little bit earlier about family, and, you know, you obviously have your kids, your wife, and one of the things that we've talked about with lots of coaches is just how they balance their family life with their ambitions as a coach. So I'm curious for you, how do you approach that with your family, keeping them involved in the program and just trying to work on that quote work-life balance?
Yeah, it's challenging, just like any coach would tell you, right? And balance is tough, especially in season. You've almost got to just integrate the two of them, right? Like, I mean,
right.
You got to bring them together and you know, I mean, my daughter's the ball girl at the games, and she's helping rebound for the guys and standing next to me during the national anthem, right? And it's like, it is what it is, man. We try to get them involved as much as we can. And, you know, there's just like any job, there's pluses and minuses, right? And there's a lot of days where maybe I'm not able to go to one of my kids' games because our team's doing something, but But man, every Saturday they have built-in entertainment, right?
And yep, absolutely.
They've got 20 older brothers that they just look up to that are coming over to the house and hanging out and doing stuff like that. And so, you know, even though there's things you miss out on as a coach, if I went and asked my kids like right now, hey, do you want me to take another job? Like doing something other than coaching, they would look at me like I was crazy, right? Like they love it. They love it. And our guys do a great job of, you know, just being like older brothers to them and looking out for them and shooting with them when they come into the gym. And, you know, it's kind of neat too. Like my daughter's 11 and she's, now, not only do we have to go to all my games, if the women have a game at home now, we've got to go as well.
Absolutely. Yeah.
She wants to go and and then, you know, they blew a team out by 20 the other night. And I wanted to leave with 5 minutes to go because I've been at, I was at the office at 6 o'clock in the morning. It's 9 o'clock at night now. I'm kind of ready to go home. Right. And, she says, no, I got to wait by the locker room, give them all high fives when the game's on. I said, you got to be kidding me. But, you know, so we waited. We waited for her to give all the women's players high fives after the game, right? And so those kinds of experiences, I think, are far outweigh the negative things that kind of come along. But as a coach, you just got to kind of infuse both the family and the program as one. And, you know, our team's going to Vegas for a big tournament in December. And my wife and kids will be on the plane with us, right? I mean, they're just part of it. You just try to make a part of it, and I think ultimately the rewards definitely outweigh the negatives.
No question, that's good stuff. We are coming up on 11:30, and I don't want you to be falling asleep tomorrow during Thanksgiving dinner. So I want to wrap it up with one final question, two parter. It's one that we frequently end episodes with, and it's just thinking ahead. What's your biggest challenge, let's say, over the next year or so that you face? And then number two, what's your biggest joy when you get up in the morning and you think about what you get to do every day as the head coach at Marietta College? What brings you the most joy about the opportunity to do that? So your biggest challenge and your biggest joy.
Well, our biggest challenge obviously was tough to it's tough for anybody to build a program, and I found out it's even hard to maintain it. Right? I mean, Once you have success, everybody's trying to knock you off. And then too, you know, I tell our guys all the time, like, you know, when you have a lot of success, you got to really fight arrogancy and complacency, right? I mean, the second you think you've arrived, someone's going to put you in your place. And so it's like, we're just constantly trying to maintain and build upon what we've established. And you know, this year's, you know, no different. We were, you know, preseason number three. We've played the toughest schedule of anybody in the country so far, and we've had a couple setbacks already, but I think we're going to grow from it. I think we'll learn from it. But just taking on, you know, having a target on your back every night and all the challenges that come with that, you know, creates a lot of work. But you know, the second part of your question, you know, every national anthem, man, the hair is standing up on my arm, and I know that this is what I was meant to do, right? And I just love to compete, and I love being around the guys and my staff. Like, you know, my assistant coaches are like my best friends. You know, I love those guys, and we have so much fun together every day. Even when we're pissed off about something, we're probably finding a way to joke about it or laugh about it and have a good time about it. We just have so much fun together. We enjoy our guys and we just like to compete, man. We like to get out there and see what we're made of. And there's, you know, you asked me earlier, it's like, yeah, I thought I was going to be a high school teacher, but this is definitely what I was meant to do with my life. And, you know, one of the coolest things in my 15 years here at Marietta, my assistant coach, Brendan McCain, got married this summer. And he actually got married in Marietta. And so, you know, all of his former teammates and all these guys, we had like 25 former players out to our house the night before the wedding and their wives or girlfriends or whatever with them. And it was that was cool, right? That's what it's all about. We had this big bash out the house and seeing these guys come back from all across the country and hearing all the crazy stories that we had over the last, you know, however many years. and seeing that those guys actually appreciate us coaches now, right?
Yeah, exactly.
That's the hard thing, right? You try to get them to understand you when they're 18 to 22 and they don't fully appreciate you until they're like 24, 25, and then they can't do anything for you anymore. But, you know, but just being around the guys and hearing all the stories and all that stuff, it's just so rewarding. It's a lot of stress. It's a lot of work, but it's also a really rewarding job.
It's well said, John. Appreciate it. And I think that what you just said really sums up again, you want to win games and you want to have that success on the court. But when you really think about what you're doing and the impact that you're having, you know, that wedding story kind of sums it up, that you have guys that come back and they're a part of your life and they're a part of, you know, again, you poured into them while they were with you. And now they're going out and doing the same for the people in their life. And that's really what coaching ultimately is all about, is having that kind of impact. Before we get out, I want to give you a chance to share, how can people reach out to you, find out more about your program at Marietta, whether you want to share email or social media, whatever you want to share with us, go ahead and do that. And then I'll jump back in and wrap things up.
Yeah, sure. So all my stuff is my contact information, I believe my social media account, Twitter account, all that stuff is online. So if people go to marietta.edu and just find the athletic page, go to men's basketball, go to coaching staff and look up John Vanderwall, you should be able to find a way to either email me or hit me on social media and all that kind of stuff. And obviously love having high school coaches come to practice. So we've got open practices. We give you a practice plan, sit down with you after practice, talk to you, whatever, whoever wants to come. Anybody that wants to talk hoops or learn more, we're there for them.
That's awesome. John, we can't thank you enough for taking the time out of your schedule tonight, especially on the eve of Thanksgiving, to join us. So we really appreciate that. And to everyone out there, thanks for listening, and we will catch you on our next episode. Thanks.
Thanks for listening to the Hoopheads podcast, presented by Head Start Basketball.